Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. Hello and a warm welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. My name is Nicole Heppner and I greet you from my home office in Hamburg.
Also a hearty welcome from my part. My name is Diane Slavik and I'm speaking to you from Stuttgart. As our guest, we are very happy to introduce and welcome Jette Katrin Hope to this podcast session. Hello Jette, thanks for your digital time and good to have you with us today.
Yeah, a big thank you for the kind invitation to contribute to your podcast series. And hello to Nicole and Dijane. And a big hello from Oslo to everyone out there listening online and also from the home office today.
As a form of introduction, we would like to introduce you shortly. Growing up multilingual with Norwegian, German and Danish, you studied architecture at the Musidius Kunsthochschule Kiel and the Städelschule Frankfurt Main. At Snowhatter, you are a director with responsibility for acquisition and new projects. You are part of the executive management of Snowhatter and you are team leader of numerous national and international project developments and competitions, for example, the Oslo Opera House. Please give us a picture of Snowhatter and what your studio stands for.
Yeah, maybe I should start with the name. And since over 30 years, Snowhatter has borrowed its name from a mountain, the second highest mountain in Norway. It's 2,862 meters high. And what we are tending to say that Snowhatter is a place that nobody is from, but anyone can go to. And Snowhatter began as a collaborative architectural and landscape workshop, and we have remained true to this transdisciplinary way of thinking since our inception. And to summarize it, maybe try to give a kind of simple summary, what we try with our work is to enhance our sense of surroundings, the identity and the relationship to others and the physical spaces we inhabit, whether feral or human-made. And today, Snowhatter has grown into an internationally renowned practice of architecture, landscape architecture, interior architecture, product and graphic design. And we are now more than 240 people from 32 different nations all around the world. And it started in 1989 with the winning of the competition for the new Library of Alexandria. And the main offices are in Oslo and New York. And over the years, we have opened studios in Paris, Hong Kong, Innsbruck, and Adelaide. We have maintained our original transdisciplinary approach with all the different disciplines. And I think this collaborative nature between these disciplines is a very essential driving force of our practice.
As you already said, your daily work interacts with in-house architects, interior designers, landscape architects, sociologists, graphic and industrial designers. Why is this interdisciplinarity so important for Snowhatter's projects?
As you are saying, Nicole, this definite relationship between the multiple disciplines is a driving force in all of Snowhatter's work. And this is demonstrated through our long history, where landscape and architecture work together without division from the earliest stage possible. And this approach has been expanded with the other disciplines over the years. And this commitment to an integrated transdisciplinary practice has few parallels within the industry, I think. And this self-defined transdisciplinary process, where all the different professionals come together, is important because it also emphasizes an open exchange between the roles and disciplines. So we collaborate in integrated processes, ensuring that the multiple voices are represented from the onset of a project, so to be able to grasp the holistic aspects in the project. And also when working with clients and other stakeholders, this is approach continues in a working method we have named transpositioning, where we challenge our clients to become architects and architects to become clients. And when these parties come together as equal, we create a place to mutually understand each other's objectives and interests. And I think that's very interesting, because when we encourage individuals with different professional backgrounds to think and work outside the strict parameters, that we are able to kind of grasp very different aspects of a project. So, and that means that they often take an unexpected way and introduced very early in the development of a project. This method generally leads us to prioritize and address design solutions differently. So I think, it's a very interesting, sometimes also challenging way of working.
On your website, we found a quote which says that our work strives to enhance our sense of surroundings, identity, and relationship to others, and the physical spaces we inhabit, whether ferial or human-made, museums, products, reindeer observatories, graphics, landscapes, and dollhouses get the same care and attention to purpose. When people look at your projects, they can't put a label on you. In the field of construction tasks, you are very broadly positioned. Do you have specialists for each project field in the studio, or do you approach every challenge from the very beginning with an open mind? Please yet to tell us a bit about the working process at Snøhetta.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very precise observation you have made, because I think it's very important to state that our approach is not style-driven, but it's content-driven. So that's a big difference, I think, when you compare us with other professionals in the field. So our content-based approach is derived from long-standing Nordic traditions of humanistic values, and we stand our social grounds. And our projects have kind of not a clear-cut signature, but they are truly born out of the preconditions embedded in every task. So we kind of unfold the uniqueness of every object, every design, and every result. And based again on these Nordic values and tradition, they give evidence to how we see the world kind of, and with equality and accessibility as primary drivers. And I think that's a very important difference, the way we're approaching. And also that leads to the variety of expressions that you also have observed.
And what role does the client play in this process?
Yeah, that's also a very interesting question. And as I mentioned earlier, also in the way we include our clients in the processes, because we believe in close collaborations and co-creation with our clients. And of course, being a global company allows us to secure physical meetings and workshops when needed in all the different locations. But also, I think, and that reflects also our interdisciplinary approach, that we think that and approach design with the idea that creativity and innovation is not always the sole domain of the architect or the designer, but it's more a product and process of collaboration amongst all the participants in a project. And that's also very important that we're not working in a vacuum. We want to have the client involved very early and from the very beginning. So we believe that architecture and design also can allow creativity and innovation to emerge from within, and resulting kind of in an organic realization of a shared vision. So client, users, and also internal office workshop drive our design process and can often produce the most exciting, useful, and the very fresh takes on a problem. And that kind of gives a way to a realized project that can respond in kind. So from that, we have developed our own concept workshop method that we called Idea Work. And within this method, we co-create a concept that will hopefully then form the basis for design strategies and branding and common project ideas as a kind of conceptual springboard. So the interaction with the client is a very key part of our processes. Yes.
If we think about the present time now and your idea work processes, would you say that architecture and design changed already in this rather short period of time for you and your team? Or how does like the interaction with your clients work? And are there any profits which are the issues?
Yeah, you're thinking of now the current COVID situation, right? Yeah. Well, I would rather say that the way of collaborating has changed rather than our projects or architectures or designs so far. And so we rather expanded digital tools and online platforms to improve internal and external collaboration and communication for sure. Mm-hmm. And also we developed, for example, an online format of our concept workshop, the idea work with our clients. And that worked actually very well, surprisingly well, I have to say. And also the situation has fluctuating differently in the different parts of the world, right? So having studios all around the world also helped us dealing with the current situation. For example, Hong Kong has so far managed to contain transmissions early. And for example, our Oslo studio, since 13th of March, we are working from home and followed, of course, by Paris, Innsbruck and New York. So we are now transitioning to remote only work scenario, but slowly, of course, we are going back to our offices here in Oslo. So we are following the national guidelines that are applicable for each location. But also what I think is interesting and that we are now experiencing, for example, in a big master plan that we are working on in Milan, where we have a lot of Italian collaborators, how the crisis confirms in a way that urban planning is not only about the physical aspects of a city, but also about the engagement of its people. So also, for example, a bigger question, are we now facing a new paradigm? And how kind of the society changes from a less consumer society with fewer possessions and less travel will need a different urban setting. So a lot of questions that are more content-based maybe, and we will see how we don't have the answers yet, of course, but how will local communities be more engaged or what other transformation of urban cultures can we expect and how can we retain and improve them through planning and design? So we are actually now dealing with a lot of interesting questions that are more related maybe to a post-COVID situation and society. So a lot of interesting new dialogues that are coming out of the current situation. Yeah.
I think that's a topic actually many offices worldwide are dealing with at the moment. Mm-hmm. Thinking about the urban structures within this unusual situation we are in now. Let me ask you another thing. In the Nordic countries, you started working on digitalization and with BIM over 15 years ago already, different from other countries in Europe. So what influences does this have on your way of working?
Yeah, you are very right. I mean, in the Nordic countries, this building information modeling, the so-called BIM, has become an important and integral part of every process of designing since we have kind of, and also within the planning and construction industry over the 10, 15 years. And maybe if we start, go back a little bit to the start, it started kind of with individual architectural firms that learned Revit And after that, the entire industry had moved towards the use of model data in all phases, from design competition to management, operation, and maintenance. So BIM has also become a requirement in the public building sector, especially. And we think also it's an interesting tool, an important tool to track and quantify the embodied energy in building materials, for example, and to reduce the CO2 footprint in our designs. Also, in terms of sustainability, it's an interesting tool that, of course, can be further developed. And for us, as an international example, for example, the construction project in Paris and the headquarters of the French newspaper Le Monde. Mm-hmm. And here a SNERTA team of architects was building their own design workshop using a combination of computer tools, BIM, and also cloud-based platforms. And this workflow allowed SNERTA and all the external collaborators involved to coordinate and communicate this very complex building design, and also to manage and maintain design changes in a live database. So there we were using tools such as Revit, Rhino, Grasshopper, Dynamo, and Flux, and the team members could communicate very effectively with each other. So yeah, we are very used to using these tools. They are becoming a very integrated part of our tools and design development.
How do you make the most digitalization today compared to several years ago? What would you say?
Well, the analog and the digital aspects are clearly embedded in SNERTA's design methodology. It's a constant state of reinvention and improvement. And well, honestly, we don't think so much about it. It's more an organic part of the workflow. And to explain a little better, our working method practices a simultaneous exploration of traditional handicraft, like that the analog and cutting-edge digital technology is a kind of complementary relationship that drives our creative processes. For example, here in Oslo, the core of the design studio is a state-of-the-art modeling workshop equipped with 3D rapid prototyping capabilities and a large manufacturing robot that we use a lot. And alongside traditional woodworking machines, these tools enable rapid prototyping to become an integral part of the design process. So we produce a lot of working models along the way to test our design. And by this, ideas can move seamlessly between analog and digital worlds. And I think that's a very important aspect. And of course, lately, due to the current situation, we rather use the different digital tools and online platforms also to improve internal and external communication. So we implemented also other programs like Slack, for example, for internal communication, and Miro for exchanging design ideas. So we are expanding all the time.
So when it gets to Norway, the first thing we think of is nature. Is there a special interest for sustainability in your work and projects as a Norwegian studio?
Yeah, I would say it's not necessarily limited to the Norwegian context, but it's more at the heart of all SNERTA's work lies a commitment to social sustainability, shaping the built environment in the service of humanism through well-conceived design that can improve people's well-being and make life more enjoyable. And this is the starting point for sustainable ambitions in any project, whether aiming to reduce carbon footprint or if we want to encourage social diversity. And yeah, I think that's why we also then focus on to respect each project unique preconditions like climate, culture, history in every task. So that's kind of the driving force also of our planning and design process. And the design team works with close attention to the context of spaces that they are shaping. So Yeah, again, it's not Norwegian only interest. It's kind of how we approach what is in the heart of our design approach.
You were involved in the Powerhouse project in Trondheim and Sandvika. Can you please tell us a bit of the basic ideas of these plus energy houses?
Sure. Maybe I first should start with a brief introduction to the Powerhouse collaboration, because maybe not all the people out there have heard about it. It's a multidisciplinary partnership with the building industry leaders dedicated to creating energy positive buildings. And Snerta is the lead architect. So 10 years ago, we started this collaboration. And the Powerhouse collaboration aims to set a new standard for construction of the buildings of tomorrow, one that produces more energy than it consumes over its lifespan. And what is important, that it includes construction, demolition, and the embodied energy of materials. And I think that's the biggest difference when you compare it to other plus energy initiatives all around the world. So it includes the embodied energy and the materials used to construct the building. The Powerhouse Brattørkaia in Trondheim, that is the world's northernmost energy-positive building. It's an 18,000 square meter office building that is situated by the harbor in Trondheim. On average, this powerhouse building produces more than twice as much electricity as it consumes daily, and it will supply renewable energy to itself, of course, but also to its neighboring buildings, electric buses, cars, and boats through a local microgrid. And on the opposite, the Powerhouse Kjørbo, located outside in Oslo, Sandvika, and that building opened in April 2014 and was actually the first powerhouse project to complete it by the collaboration. And by optimizing and combining existing technologies in new ways, the two office buildings from the 1980s were renovated into positive energy buildings. So that's actually a retrofit building. And after the renovation, the building energy needs have been reduced by 90%. And I think that's quite impressive. And the local energy production is done using solar panels installed on the roof, and also ground wells in the park outside the building provide heating for radiators, water and ventilation are cool and cooling in the summer. So these are two very interesting approaches, and of course we are now currently working on other powerhouse projects, like for example the Powerhouse Svart hotel at the glacier up in the north. So that's a hotel building.
Wow, quite interesting. So thanks a lot, Jette, for sharing your time with us.
It was a great pleasure talking to you and learn a little bit more about your work with Snøhetta. Jette, is there something you would like to send as a message to our listeners?
Yeah, keep up the good mood out there, of course. The situation requires a lot of patience from everyone, and of course all the families out there and the new ways of living. But thank you for this interesting conversation. I really enjoyed it, and also for the invitation to Young Architecture Talks. I think it's a very nice initiative, and I hope a lot of people out there think it's interesting listening to it.
Okay, thanks a lot to our listeners as well. If you enjoyed the podcast, we are happy to be recommended.
Stay healthy to all of you outside, and we're looking forward to our next session of Young Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture. Please join us and hear you next time.